I would like to take the opportunity to thank all of you who supports me and my team on Patreon or by signing up for a membership or newsletter. If everybody pledged a few dollars or euros on Patreon, which is less than the cost of a cup of coffee, we can take this to a whole new level. Do more, share more, and get the truth out there in all different directions. So please consider our Patreon page now. And so, let's get on with the show.
We are fighting a war. I'm convinced that it is one of the most unjust wars that has ever been fought in the history of the world.
Welcome to Light on Conspiracies, the place where truth and love transcend the darkness. Your host, Peace Award-winning researcher Ole Damagod. To listen to this full interview, just go to lightonconspiracies.com and subscribe.
I'm here today with a guest that I feel very honored and extremely happy to have on the show. His name is Field McConnell, and he has an extremely interesting background in many different areas, and he comes from also levels of society in the military and with family connections that have put him in direct contact with some of the major conspiracies and some of the major networks that are at work in the world today. So it's with great joy that I welcome you to the show, Field.
Well, thank you. It's not only my honor and my privilege to be here, but as I may have mentioned to you in an email, it's my mandate. I'm in a unique position, and I am in this position not for my own benefit, but hopefully so that we can help the world understand how the forces of good and evil are battling over us, the global common people.
For those of our viewers that don't know about you, I don't think there's that many, but I'm sure maybe some, could you give a background a bit about yourself, your military background, and so on, to get a better understanding of who you are and where you are at this point in your life?
Okay, well, I was born into a military family. My mother was a U.S. Army nurse in World War II. She met my father when he came back from being a prisoner of the Japanese in World War II. He had been a bomber pilot, and his B-24 bomber was shot down. He spent 18 months in a prison camp. And when they met each other in the hospital, he is a patient, she is a nurse, they actually fell in love. I wasn't there, of course. I came along later. But they got married 2 weeks after they met. They were happily married for 62 years. I grew up in an Air Force environment. I moved from Texas to Florida to Massachusetts to Puerto Rico to Hawaii. When I graduated from high school in Hawaii, it was a very prestigious school that I had no business being at because I was not a good student. But the name of the school is Punahou, P-U-N-A-H-O-U. And interestingly enough, this is the same school where 12 years behind me, a person named Barry Sotero, S-O-E-T-O-R-O, graduated from Punahou. Later, my own sister gave him a passport that said Barack H. Obama. That occurred in 1994. But when I graduated from Punahou, I had the good fortune of being accepted by the United States Naval Academy at Annapolis, and having grown up in a military family, I believed in the U.S. military, I believed in the United States of America. I couldn't believe that I was accepted to Annapolis, but then again, when I applied in 66 and when I got accepted in 67, we had a very unpopular war called Vietnam, and a lot of young men who were more capable of qualifying for the Naval Academy didn't want any part of the military. And in retrospect, they were right and I was wrong. One person that also came from the Naval Academy, and he's one of my adversaries now, is a senator from Arizona named John McCain, who, like my father, was a POW. after I left the Naval Academy, I was in the Marine Corps as a pilot for 6 years. Then I determined that my future did not lie in the United States Marine Corps. And fortunately for me, I was recruited by the North Dakota Air National Guard. And that's a reserve component of the United States Air Force. I went and flew for the United States Air Force at the North Dakota Air National Guard in F-4 Phantoms and F-16s. And it was during this military career at the North Dakota Guard from 1977 to 1993 that I learned about the interception and removal of unidentified flying objects. And what we would do is we'd be launched from our base of operations, regardless if it was home in Fargo or somewhere like Iceland, or the North Dakota Air National Guard was down at Norfolk, Virginia for 9/11, and they responded to the events in Washington, D.C. from that location. But our mission was to get very little notice, get in the air, and go towards the unidentified flying vehicle as fast as possible and visually identify it using our own eyeballs, and then stand by for if we declared the target hostile. That was our first job, declare it friendly or hostile. And then if we said hostile, we needed to be in a position to eliminate the target immediately upon a clearance to fire. Now, this prepared me very well for what has become my core issue, not voluntarily. I don't think anybody would volunteer for what I've been involved in, but I'm involved in it nonetheless. And 9/11 is really the core issue. If people anywhere in the world know my name, it's probably because of either 9/11 or MH370. So that's my history in a nutshell. Up until the time I left the North Dakota Air National Guard, I was concurrently flying as an airline pilot at Northwest Airlines. And I ended up leaving the airline community early too, because in 2006, I reported to the United States government some troubling information about 9/11 and the fact that airliners had been illegally modified and flown as drones. And I think that's pretty much a short history of Field McConnell.
So just on a personal note, how is it to fly an F-16 for anyone who hasn't tried it?
Well, it's the simplest airplane I've ever flown. And I say that for two reasons. I have a different personality than a lot of pilots, and I absolutely hate studying. I hate reading. I hate sitting in simulators. I'd rather just go out and hop in the airplane. It's like a bicycle. Now, whether you're from Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, Spain, a lot of people use bicycles. And if you were a thief and the bicycle wasn't locked, you could pretty much hop on any bicycle and ride it. And the same is true of airplanes. The same principles apply, they're physical and scientific principles, they apply to all airplanes. But on my very first flight in the F-16, I had an instructor in the back seat behind me. And then the airplane's so simple that on your second flight, you're in a single seat airplane all by yourself. And to give you an idea of what the world looks like from an F-16 pilot seat, it's exactly the same as if you're sitting on the end of a diving board, because you have this glass all around you. You can look down, you can look up, you can look behind you, you can look in front of you. And the F-16 flight characteristics are such, and the weapons are such, is if you can see a target, you can engage the target, because the aircraft is so maneuverable, you can stick its nose anywhere you want. And you don't have to stick its nose at the target to kill the target, but it's always easier for a one-man airplane if you can monitor the technology and visually monitor the target and then maneuver your airplane to be a threat to them without them getting into the heart of the envelope to employ weapons. So I would say the F-16 is a joy to fly, and that's why it's flown by so many air forces around the world. It's easy to fly, it's very lethal, and it was a lot of fun when I was a young man.
It's very powerful as well, isn't it?
Oh yes, it doesn't weigh much, and there's times when it has more thrust than it has weight. And so it is very powerful. It can accelerate very quickly. It can do 9 Gs, and what a G is the force of gravity. And you look fairly healthy and slim, so maybe you weigh 170 pounds. But if you were pulling 9 Gs and you weighed 170, your body would be feeling like it was 1,530 pounds. So it puts a lot of stress on your skeleton. And we've never met. I think someday we will meet, maybe in Texas, maybe in Czechoslovakia. But when you meet me, if I turn to the side, you'll see that my neck is bent forward. And it's not because I drank too much coffee or I have a congenital defect. What happens is F-16 pilots and probably F-18, and let's get the Russians involved in this by all means, because I love Russia. But the Russian fighters are really, really good aircraft. And those guys, you know, their bodies get punished pulling all these Gs. And what it does, if you had 100 pilots in the room and 10 of them were F-16 pilots, you could pick them out. They'd be the guys where their neck leans forward and their head is forward of their neck. And I'll just give you, I don't know if you can see it, but if you see me in person, you'll see it. And it's just a physical cost of flying the F-16, but the joy was worth the cost. And I'm retroactively lamenting the fact that I had all this power in my hands, and yet I was being part of what I would say is an evil force, because the United States military is one of the three evil powers in the world. This is my opinion. This is not a fact. I believe that the religious or the faith-based evil is centered in the Vatican, at the Jesuit portion of the Vatican. I would say the financial evil is centered in the city of London, and I'd say the military evil is deployed from Washington, D.C. And yet, in my country, the United States of America, there are many four-star admirals and generals who don't yet know that they're involved in evil. And they are, and they may not like to hear that out of my voice, but that's okay. I only say what I know, and if it's just something I believe, then I express it as an opinion. I know that what the United States has been doing militarily is evil.
I did an interview with Chip Tatum, the CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum, who spent his whole adult life in the U.S. military, to some extent as an assassin. He was the head of Pegasus and also secret hit team under the George Bush W. George Bush Senior, under his direct control. And he said that the U.S. military is the biggest terror tool on the earth. Is that something you would say is correct?
Yes, and I want to, I bet you might have heard this before because of what you do and what you've done for 30 years, but the United States of America claims that they're involved in what is now a 16 or 17 year global war on terror, and nothing could be further from the truth. What the United States military is involved in is a global war of terror. And so it's not like we're fighting a bunch of foreign terrorists. We are the domestic terrorists that are fighting foreign innocent people. And I take strong exception to that. And it's my right as an American to express myself. But my mother, my father, and myself all served honorably in the military branches. My mother in the Army, my father in the Army and the Air Force, and myself in the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marine Corps. And all the time that we were serving, we thought we were serving the good side, and we thought the United States was the power for peace and the beacon on the hill. And it turns out that now at age 67, I look backwards and I can see that we were just unwitting participants in very evil acts. And there's at the end of this hour or 2 hours or 5 hours or whatever we're doing, at the end of this, I would like people to remember two words, love and hate, or good and evil. But the world was built for people to practice love. and it is being destroyed by people who practice hate. And on the, to some degree, I feel bad that I was a participant in the hateful act against peaceful people, but I plead forgiveness because I didn't know, because the leadership in the United States military, they don't tell the truth about what we're doing. And we're at a critical, very critical time in the world history right now. We've had a recent change of administration in the United States of America, and we have a situation where military people are having great influence on the acts of the president, Mr. Trump, and our foreign policy. And I just hope and pray that the Marines that are running the military end of the United States of America at this very moment, I hope they understand the good and the evil argument, because I know in the end, good prevails, but there's so much suffering that does not need to be endured. From this very moment, I'm speaking to you on Wednesday, which I think is the 30th of August. From Wednesday, the 30th of August going forward, we don't have to suffer. But I think unless the people running the United States of America understand truly what's going on, I think there will be suffering. And if that's to come to pass, I'd like to apologize to the people of the world. It doesn't have to be that way. We are created and we are caused and we are expected to love one another.
You know, the longer I live, the more I find out how much I've been lied to and how much of the things that we're being told are based on total, absolute lies and propaganda. When from looking from the outside, and when you look at the firepower of the U.S. compared to the rest of the world and so on, do the U.S. actually have any real enemies? And if so, who are they?
This is going to surprise you a little. It's going to surprise your listeners a lot more. I think the greatest enemies that the United States of America have are corporations in the United Kingdom. And that's so easy for me to say that. And if we were in an auditorium right now, people might be waving their hands and saying, can you give us an example? And yes, I can. In this year, 2017, they've had four events where U.S. Navy vessels have suffered significant accidents. The most recent two were the USS Fitzgerald, which is a guided missile frigate, and the USS McCain, another guided missile frigate. In both cases, these ships had collisions at sea with civilian flagged merchant vessels. Okay? Now, in both cases, the Fitzgerald and the McCain, as well as both surface merchant vessels, were being remotely controlled. In other words, there was a cyber attack against the Fitzgerald, there was a cyber attack against the McCain, and in both cases, the remote sponsors of these accidents took control of the steering of the ships and also took control of the propulsion or the power or the engines or the turbines of the ships. Now, there's a lot of countries that could do that, perhaps, but it's my opinion, and I'm sitting in the United Kingdom right now, I believe it was corporations in the United Kingdom, and I'll name them, Serco, S-E-R-C-O. I would encourage your listeners to go to YouTube and just search S-E-R-C-O for the title, The Biggest Company You Never Heard Of. Serco runs the entire United States military. Now, that's treason. Serco is a British corporation. Let me say this again. Serco runs the entire United States military. That's treason. Another corporation over here, and they changed their names, but at one point, if not today, they were called BAE, British Aerospace. BAE and Serco have the technological capability of taking any airliner anywhere in the world or any surface vessel anywhere in the world and controlling its steering and its propulsion. If you can control the steering and the propulsion of Malaysia 370 or the USS McCain, you can cause false flag attacks where people, in the case of the Fitzgerald and the McCain, they were operating in the Pacific. And if we were to gather 100 people and sit them down at a restaurant in Spain and say, if these U.S. ships were attacked in the Western Pacific, you know, who likely did it? A lot of people that talk more than they think would say China. I will argue that till my dying breath. China is so heavily invested in the United States of America. From a financial standpoint alone, China needs the United States to prosper. Well, then if it's not China, who could it be? Well, maybe some people would say Russia, because they know in the Black Sea, the Russians have demonstrated their power of EMP to shut down U.S. Navy vessels as well as vessels from other countries. Well, I grew up in an Air Force family environment where we were taught to hate the Russians because the Russians were coming. They want to kill us. No, they don't. I think I can't speak for Vladimir Putin, and I won't speak for President Trump. But I think if they're wise, not smart, not intelligent, wise, and I believe they are in both cases, Trump and Putin, I think if they're wise, they could see the merit in Russia and the United States cooperating, the Russia, the United States, and China cooperating. And if we can eliminate who our enemy isn't, in other words, if what I'm saying, and this is an opinion, this is certainly not a fact, but it's a well-researched opinion. If it's not the Chinese causing these events, and it's not the Russians, well, then who could it be? Well, it could be the Israelis. Of course, they're a proxy of the United Kingdom. It could be the United Kingdom. And then I'm going to lean on you with your European background. I think there's an Iranian foundation or organization called Keshe, K-E-S-H-E, and that organization has advertised that they can shut down any military vehicle, meaning aircraft or ship, anytime they want. But I think that the Keshe people are peace-loving, and I think they want to use their technology for peace and love. So the end of my opinion is I believe that the United Kingdom, in the corporations of Serco and BAE, are behind the 4 attacks in the U.S. Pacific Fleet. I think they were intended to humiliate the United States military, and maybe to some degree the United States military as a organization does need a little humiliation, but those dead sailors on both ships, the Fitzgerald and the McCain, in both cases, there were young enlisted sailors that died, and I've never mentioned this to you before, but one thing that I could be described at is a very strong and intellectually powerful, meaning I have information, not IQ, but I have a lot of information that I can use to be an advocate for the enlisted forces, not only of the United States, but of every country in this world. I don't want to see a dead North Korean 19-year-old kid. I don't want to see a dead Afghani 13-year-old boy that steps on a landmine. I don't want to see any of our supposed enemies, like if people in the United States think that we should hate Yemen or be upset with Qatar or be upset with Afghanistan. I don't agree with them. I think the United States Department of Defense needs to do what its name indicates, defend. Defend who? Defend the United States. We don't need to be in 170 countries to defend the United States. We can bring it all back. We can super fortify the United States of America. I don't think we have a natural enemy out there unless it's the United Kingdom. Now, let me give you some historical background. Between World War I and World War II, the United States Department of War, as it was accurately named back then, before they became engaged in deception by calling themselves Department of Defense. Back in about 1935, the United States Department of War came up with contingent plans to to fight wars against any enemy we might have anywhere in the world. All these war plans were color-coded. One of the plans in 1935 was to either defend against a war from the United Kingdom or instigate an attack on the United Kingdom. And the name of that plan, and I hope your listeners go to a search engine and see this is absolutely accurate, because our countries, it doesn't matter if it's Denmark, Spain, Czechoslovakia, United States, New Zealand, we don't teach history, we teach lies. And War Plan Red was a plan by the United States military in 1935 to attack the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom has attacked the United States over and over and over again. The United Kingdom was involved in the Pearl Harbor attack. The United Kingdom, through Canada, which is a colony, was involved. They were working on the north half of the Vietnam War. In other words, corporations from the United Kingdom and Canada were opposing U.S. forces in South Vietnam. The most egregious, and first of all, I'm not smart enough to define egregious, so please don't ask me, but the most egregious British attack on the United States of America would have been 9/11, and they didn't do it alone. They had a lot of help from the Jesuit order of the Vatican. Of course, they had help from their colony, Canada, and they had help from the inside, and I say, meaning the inside of the United States. I'm going to give you a term now I don't think you've ever heard of, but there is a bureaucracy in the United States that 99.9% of the Americans have never heard of. It's called the United States Senior Executive Service. My own sister, Christine Marcy, and I'll spell my sister's name, she's the second most evil person that I'm aware of in the United States. Her name is spelled K-R-I-S-T-I-N-E. Her last name is Marcy, M-A-R-C-Y. In 1978, President Jimmy Carter asked my sister, Christine Marcy, to create a new bureaucracy called the United States Senior Executive Service. She created it in 1979. It exists to this day, and it would be more accurately called Treason Incorporated. When the events of 9/11 unfolded, I recognized with my own eyes, these eyes have glasses now. Back when 9/11 occurred, I didn't always wear glasses. I used eyes like this. On 9/11, my eyes saw my own technology being played out. Over and over, people around the world watched what they thought was United 175 striking the second tower. What I saw in that was I saw remote-controlled drones striking the second tower, and I knew where that technology came from because I had explained it to my sister in December of 1988. She was then in charge of the U.S. Marshals Service, and she asked me how to get passengers from Hawaii to the mainland. They needed to do that because they had courts in Hawaii, but no federal prisons. So I told my sister, and I'll speed this up because we have a limited time, but I told my sister, just get some airliners and drone them. She said, what does that mean? I said, in addition to the human crew, you put technology in there that if the human crew is killed, incapacitated, or interfered with, the aircraft can fly itself safely to the destination and land. That's exactly what we saw on 9/11. We saw remotely controlled drones attacking iconic buildings, two in New York. There may have been a third building that was supposed to be attacked in New York, that being Solomon Brothers building number 7. And why do I suggest it may have been a target? Well, because they blew it down anyway in a controlled demolition. And I don't want to be flippant or humorous, because all of what we're talking about is evil and sickness. But the people that planned 9/11, they didn't have the best aviation people working with them. In fact, I'd say the best aviation people are working against them at this very moment. But Building 7 had to come down because what was in that building, and not only that, but what had been removed from that building. But I'll leave that for another day. The iconic buildings in New York were World Trade 1, World Trade 2, and to a lesser degree, World Trade 7. in Washington, D.C., the targets were the Pentagon, which is the, I think you and I might have exchanged an email, or maybe we had a Skype conversation where you said that Washington, D.C. is sort of the military center of the world control mechanism, which is certainly true. But when they attacked the Pentagon with what was a Raytheon A3 Sky Warrior, what they were trying to send a signal to, not so much to the outside world, but to the United States itself. The message was, we can attack and destroy your greatest fortress with impunity. The other target that did not get attacked because United 93 was 41 minutes late was the U.S. Capitol building. Many people know, I'm sure most of your informed viewers know this already, but certainly you have new people every day. And for the new people that might view your broadcast of this, the United States Congress and the United States Senate both were in one building, the U.S. Capitol building. That was the target of the second A3 Sky Warrior. And the only reason the second A3 Sky Warrior couldn't strike the target and kill the entire United States elective government is because the offending flying vehicle was there on time, but the United 93, the flight that was going to be blamed, did not get there because it was delayed on the ground at Newark's Liberty Airport for 41 minutes. And by the time United 93 got up in the air so that it could be blamed for hitting the Capitol had already been evacuated. And so by an act of God in the 41-minute delay, the United States of America was saved. And we're not out of the woods yet. There's people that want us dead or in a doornail. I'll give you a name, George Soros. He's working so hard to destroy this country that has been so kind to him, but he's going to fail. If the attack of 9/11 had succeeded, it's my opinion that we would have, our power of control would have gone to the shadow government. And the shadow government is a term that your listeners are very familiar with. It's a term that Donald Trump is really getting quite an education on. The shadow government now, for these trendy young guys that like to change names, now they call it the deep state. The deep state, the shadow government, call it what you will. My sister and Hillary Clinton are two of the principals of that organization. And do I take delight in vilifying my sister? No, I don't. But she's an enemy of my country. She's an enemy of God. She's an innocent. She's an enemy of the world's people. There's 7 billion people in the world, and there's no reason why 7 billion people should have their lifestyle negatively impacted because of a handful of evil people. And I stop short of saying another word, starts with B, but the people that are participating in evil, I know who they are and they know who I am. And I know from what I've read in a book that good and love end happily, whereas bad and evil get what they have coming. It's been so long delayed. We as humans, we know that there's plenty of people that know the truth, and I'm not frustrated, but I think a lot of people like me are frustrated because they say, well, if all this information's out there and people are communicating it like you are and like I am, why don't we have this problem taken care of? And the answer is because it's not up to our timing. We're doing our job. You're doing yours. I'm doing mine. There's hundreds of other people working as aggressively as you and I are. But of course, when you have, let's say we got 500 truth tellers that are really truth tellers instead of shills. If we're working as hard as we can, 18 hours a day, it's still not going to happen on my schedule or yours because there's only one schedule for this. And I do not believe it's controlled by humans, good or bad, but I can tell you, and once again, this has to be an opinion. I mean, academically, it can't be a fact because it happened yet. It has not happened yet, but I am very, very sure that we're going to have a happy ending, not a tearful ending. If this world was not created to be destroyed by humans, and I don't care about all the geoengineering, like the 30.56 inches in Houston that can be controlled by HARP. I don't care about all the vaccines that are making people, especially in China, autistic. I don't care about all the genetically modified foods that are making boys more like girls and girls more like boys. These are all plans of men, and those plans will end in failure. There is a plan for the world, and the plan is a good one. And I don't think, as strongly as I can believe, I don't think we're going to have to wait a whole lot longer to see the goodness come out. And, you know, I hope that you haven't heard me say this before, but I'm anticipating being put in a position where I'm going to be running a veterans ranch in Texas. Now, I just said I'm going to be running a veterans ranch in Texas, to which most of your listeners would rightfully conclude, oh, Field's going to be running a ranch for the benefit of U.S. veterans. No, I'm not. If I run a ranch in Texas, which I truly believe I will be within several months, it will be a ranch where military veterans from around the world are encouraged to come and share in peace, in camaraderie, but mostly in love and honesty. Because I, and two of my targeted nations, by the way, the ones that I, and I am going to be in charge of the ranch if the ranch occurs, so I will be effectively the chairman of the board or the CEO, and I'm not that type of person. You can see what type of person I am. I'm a happy-go-lucky guy that just hates innocent people being hurt. But, you know, it looks like it's going to be my my opportunity, my pleasure to be in charge of this ranch. The two countries I'm going to invite to the ranch first, the military people, are the United Kingdom and Russia. Because the United Kingdom, the people in the United Kingdom military, they don't know they're deployed against the U.S. It's my, well, they in fact are not, but their corporations are. But the other nation is Russia. I've flown against Russia, and I've been, when I was an airline pilot in Kazakhstan, I had a Russian bear bomber pilot in the cockpit of the airliner I was flying. He spoke not a word of English. I only spoke about two words in Russian, and I'll keep those to myself. But he and I were working through the co-pilot who spoke fluent Russian and pretty good English, not perfect. But between the Russian bomber pilot and the Air Force fighter pilot, we got along famously. And that, I know we can. It's peace is, when I was growing up in the 60s and I heard all these peaceniks talk about world peace, let's give peace a chance, I thought, what a dumb idea. Well, guess what? It's not a dumb idea. It's my idea now too. And I think the greatest thing that myself and people like you can do is we can have educational seminars on this ranch in Texas and bring in people from around the world. And if people from around the world, if the military of Russia, the military of Kazakhstan, the military of North Korea, the military of New Zealand, if we all get together and see how much alike we are and how much love we have for our own families and how much we want our families to live in peace and to have an abundance, not too much, just enough to get by, enough food, enough shelter, enough clothes, but mostly enough love.
You've been listening to the first hour of A Light on Conspiracies podcast. To access the second hour of this and all podcasts, please visit lightonconspiracies.com and get a membership for the price of a cup of coffee. Now, back to the show.
Well, I think it's wonderful to hear, because this is how I feel as well, that it's not the soldiers that are evil. It's not the normal soldiers who are just trying to survive and take care of their bodies and get through it and defend themselves and are shit scared and being shot at and everything like that, not understanding the bigger agenda. And the bigger agenda is very, very ugly when you look at it, because it has nothing to do with what these individuals have been told. But we're back to greed and evil on this very high level, where normal people are just being used as cannon fodder. And so I think it's a beautiful thing to bring these warriors together, like native Indian warriors, sort of like in a tribal form, and just sit down in respect and honor each other and just see that, listen, guys, we have been totally duped. We have been played, and it's time to stop this game. But Field, if I say that it is a mistake to look at, when you look at this whole thing globally, that it's a mistake to look at it like nations against each other, but that the right, correct thing would be to look at it from a higher level, a higher perspective, where these countries are just being used as pawns on a chessboard. Do you think that it's a correct interpretation or not?
I think it's absolutely accurate, going back to World War I, and now that I think about it, going back to the Civil War. The Civil War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the deserts, and Afghanistan, these are all controlled by the military-industrial complexes, and they're being whipsawed by the global bankers. Let me give you a couple of examples that I know of firsthand. In World War II, the United States and the United Kingdom wanted to go over and bomb Germany because Germany was the great evil. But even then, believing that Germany was a great evil, which they weren't, the United States Air Force and the United Kingdom Air Force, which is called the Royal Air Force, there were certain German targets they were not allowed to bomb. Have you ever heard this before?
Yeah.
Good, good. I'm glad, because everyone needs to hear this. I've met a man who's he's a German ethnic. In other words, his family is from Germany. He lives in the United States. His family name is Mahle, M-A-H-L-E. During World War II, their family were master machinists that build not only ball bearings, but also pistons for the German Luftwaffe fighter aircraft. Prescott Bush, now many of your listeners would recognize Bush. I would say a large number of your listeners know who Prescott Bush is. Prescott Bush is allegedly the father of G.H.W. Bush, the grandfather of G.W. Bush. He was involved in using his influence to protect certain German targets. This guy, Prescott Bush, who is from a powerful banking family, he's basically doing deals with the enemy. Well, the enemy, the German people are wonderful machinists. I mean, every snob in the United States of America drives a German car. You know, they either drive a Mercedes, or they drive a Audi, or they drive a BMW, or a Volkswagen, or now some people are driving Skodas, which is a Czechoslovakian Volkswagen. The German people have been under attack for a long time, World War I, World War II. Here's a piece of history that you may not be aware of, and I'm telling you a fact, not an opinion, and you can always ask me, is that a fact or is that an opinion? There was a fire in Chicago. It started on October 8th of 1871, and it burned until October 11th of 1871. The fire was started, allegedly, according to history books, and according to legend, and according to media, a woman named Mrs. O'Leary had a cow in a barn, and the cow kicked a lantern, you know, a gasoline lantern over, and it started a fire. That's not true. I know the name of the man who started the fire, and I'll get to that in a minute. But what was burned in Chicago for 4 days, October 8, 1871 to October 11, 1871, was the German section of Chicago. The German section, and you can prove this by reading true history, on the day the fire started, there were 13,600 structures in the German section of Chicago. On October 11th, when the flames were put out, there were 300 structures left standing. Somebody hated Germany and Germans so much, they burned down 13,300 structures in an attempt to slow down the German machinists who were making America better. Interestingly enough, it's not critical, but it is interesting that on the same day, October 8th of 1871, a fire was started in Peshtigo. That's a tough word for any language, but I'll spell it. P-E-S-H-T-I-G-O. Peshtigo, Wisconsin was burned. And what was up there? Well, a bunch of German people with a bunch of technology that were going to make clearing woods and cutting woods and producing lumber easier. But some group of people didn't want the Germans to prosper. Now, that same group of people apparently didn't want the Germans to prosper when World War I was instigated. Perhaps they didn't want Germany to prosper when World War II was instigated. But in all these cases, and I'm not willingly a student of history, but I've been forced to become one. Who would benefit if Germany was abused in 1871, if Germany was abused in 1914 to 1918, and if Germany was abused in 1939 to 1945? The United Kingdom. And the people that started the fire in the Chicago were Brits, or Brits had hired Americans to do the dirty work. You've heard the name David Cameron, the former Prime Minister of England.
That's true.
Yes, and I think it's fair to say, I'm pretty sure this is a fact, but I believe that he might be what is called a Khazarian Jew, K-H-A-Z-A-R-I-A-M. And those are fake Jews that try to do evil things and blame it on the good Jews. But, you know, once you start talking about Jewish people, you get attacked from every side. You get attacked by the bad Jews, the good Jews. People think they're Jews and they're not really. But on the morning of the 8th of October of 1871, the man who had organized the Chicago fire was the great-grandfather of David Cameron, and his name was Geddes, G-E-D-D-E-S. And I think his first name might have been Alexander. It doesn't matter, but his last name was Geddes. He was in the banking and the grain industry in Chicago. So he had a lot of money to make. As the wheat would come from the Dakotas and Montana and Iowa and Minnesota, and it would come down to Chicago to, in the big mills to be turned into flour and foodstuffs, somebody could control a lot of money if they could control Chicago in terms of either slowing it down or speeding it up with the Industrial Revolution. Well, I think his name, that Geddes guy, I think it was Alexander Geddes, but he was a Scottish man, and he had the ignition instructions and the insurance policies that covered all this loss, not only the instigation or the initiation or the ignition of the fire. He had those instructions, and the company, or the surname of the company which ignited the Chicago fire, and I don't think you would have ever heard this before, but you can research and find it to be true. Blatchford, B-L-A-T-C-H-F-O-R-D. And the Blatchford that was involved in the ignition of the Chicago fire, his first name is really a tough one in any language. It's spelled E-L-I-P-H-A-T, I think, and it's pronounced Eliphat. But that was his first name, and he was an American, and he helped the Geddes enterprise start the fire, and Geddes had a fireproof safe somewhere that survived the fire, and in that fireproof safe were the ignition instructions for the Chicago fire, as well as the insurance papers. And Geddes himself was quoted as saying, if they hadn't have gotten that safe out of Chicago and back to Scotland, their family fortune would have been lost. Well, what he's saying as a Scot, and you know, I think Scottish people don't want necessarily to be considered UK or Great Britain people. I think they sort of have an independent streak. And I say that because they've been aligned with France in something called the Auld Alliance, A-U-L-D Alliance. Most people don't know this kind of stuff, And I wouldn't know it either, except for the people trying to destroy the world, got me to quit flying airplanes and start thinking. Well, you know, from the time they set the Chicago fire till World War I, to World War II, to all subsequent wars, who's been making money? And people can answer that for themselves. They can research it. They might know already. But just to make this as simple as we possibly can, you and I, so that people that are new to this can learn quicker, the global center of money is sovereign territory in the United Kingdom called the City of London. It's roughly 1 square mile, and it's not controlled by England or the United Kingdom or Great Britain. It's controlled by the people there. And if the Queen of England, or if she were to pass away and then we would have the King of England, the monarch of England have to take off all their regalia. For instance, if the Queen wants to go into the City of London, she has to contact the mayor of the City of London and ask permission. And if permission's granted, she has to take off her, whatever they call that thing on their head. I think it's called a tiara. But she can't go in there looking like a monarch, because they don't recognize her. And so the money is always made in the City of London. The abuse of faithful people, I don't care what they have faith in, but the word Catholic means united. And for a long time, going back to at least 1763, the Rothschild family, which was then called Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, the Rothschilds in Germany got a hold of a man named Adam Weishaupt, and that's spelled W-E-I-S-P-H-A-U-T, I believe. And the mayor of the Rothschild family asked this guy, how can we establish a new world order? This is 1763. And so that family and the Jesuits in the Vatican and the City of London, they've been trying to control the world since 1763, and they've almost gotten it done. On 9/11, they failed. They were one airplane and one target short of control. But they've got really dirty hands, and I'm not suggesting that England, the United Kingdom, or Great Britain is bad. I don't believe that. I believe they're good. But I believe the people that have usurped power in the United Kingdom, I think the Jesuits who usurped power in the Vatican, and I think the Department of Defense, or those bureaucrats controlling the U.S. Department of Defense who've usurped power in the United States of America, these are the three axes, I guess the word is axes, A-X-E-S, of evil. It's evil to mislead. If you take a world population, let's say there's a billion Catholics in the world and they're all being lied to, like you and I are, they would be very just in having righteous anger about those who've lied to them for hundreds of years, which are the Jesuits. Well, the wars I've talked about, the Civil War, World War I, World War II, Korea, these have all benefited the bankers and the people that make military hardware. It certainly doesn't advantage the North Koreans and the South Koreans that have been pitted against the 38th parallel for 60 years. They don't get anything out of conflict. When the United States military, guys my age, went to Vietnam and got slaughtered, disfigured, amputated, PTSD'd, or the lucky ones died. The scars mentally for the survivors are incredible. I'm so happy. In fact, the correct word is blessed. I'm very blessed that when I tried to get into Vietnam, when I graduated from Obama's school, which is Punahou, I told my parents, I really want to get in the U.S. Army and fly helicopters, and I want to go to Vietnam and end this war. That's how naive I was. Well, fortunately, my parents were not as naive as I were, and they said, well, that's great, Field, that you want to do your patriotic duty, but why don't you go to college 4 years and then get a job where if you want to go to Vietnam, you go over there in an air-conditioned aircraft. And I thought, I sort of like air conditioning. So that's how I went to the Naval Academy. And I was very, very, to this day, I'm extremely pro-military, but for one purpose only, to defend your country or defend a weaker country that's being taken advantage of by an evil adversary. The United States of America, I don't think we have the evil adversaries that the media would tell us. I don't think the Russians, and this is an opinion, this is not a fact. It's my belief that the Russians are not the problem. The Chinese are not the problem. And if the Israelis and the Brits ever contemplated what would happen if Russia, China, and the United States decided they wanted to encourage peace, I don't think the UK and Israel could stop it. And, you know, I pray for peace in my time and yours. And now I'm going to ask you to ask me another question, because as you've seen, I can speak for hours. And I don't want to take over your radio show. It's yours.
Phil, I think many, myself included, know very little about the Korean War and what it was all about. Could you just do the outlines about what actually happened there?
Well, most wars are, they're either looking for something legal, like minerals, or they're looking for something illegal, like drugs. The Afghanistan war is a modern day version of the minerals. Afghanistan is a very wealthy nation in terms of minerals, minerals that all countries need for their high-tech industries. Kazakhstan, where I worked for 18 months, that's the ninth largest country in the world by landmass, I believe. I would love to be corrected, but I believe that to be true. They've got more minerals than almost anybody in Kazakhstan, which is why the USSR really hated to lose Kazakhstan. And I've been to Kazakhstan, and I love the people there. I don't love the government, because the government hogs all the money and the people live in poverty, really, very poor conditions. But you asked about Korea. Korea supposedly was a battle between communists and non-communists, being the United States and Australia and some other countries. I know it wasn't. And these poor people that got, in fact, I'm named after, my first name is unusual, Field. My name comes from the fact that when my dad was a POW in Japan, his best friend was a U.S. Marine infantry officer named Bill Harris. And Bill Harris's father was a Naval Academy graduate, Marine Corps pilot, just like me. And his name was Field Harris. And so I basically got named after a guy who looked like me on the outside, but he was the exact opposite. My namesake, the guy who I'm named after, actually got a award from the United Kingdom called an OBE, which is a knighthood of the Order of the British Empire, which means he was a traitor. And I don't like to talk about traitors that I've gotten the name from, because I don't want anybody to think I'm a traitor, because I'm not. But in Korea, they were certainly trying, let's take it from the U.S. side, we would have been trying to make sure that the communists, whoever they are, you know, there's one under every bed, but nobody ever sees them. But the communists were going to come down south. Well, they were coming down there not to take the people, I assure you. It would have been the minerals or the narcotics. We saw the same thing in Vietnam. Young guys like me, when I was 18, well, I was 17, I could have ended up in Vietnam legally. 18, 19 would have been real easy. And I would have been there thinking I'm doing the right thing, and I would have been doing the wrong thing. The four-star generals running the Vietnam War were gaining incredible wealth with narcotics. So what was going on in Vietnam, they were arguing over influence, minerals, and narcotics. Some people like to say that war is based on oil and a couple of other things. I think it's GTO, but let's forget that for a minute, because I'm not articulate on that. But in the case of Vietnam, I could name four-star generals. In fact, I will, if I can pitch it. Westmoreland. There's a general who made a lot of money on narcotics. The guy who sent me to the Naval Academy was a four-star Air Force general named Hunter H. Harris. There's a guy who probably made a fair amount on the transportation of narcotics out of Vietnam. Hunter Harris was at Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii, which was one of the most heavily traveled trans-Pacific fuel stops for aircraft going from Vietnam back to the mainland U.S., typically Travis Air Force Base in California. And at Hickam, Hawaii, General Hunter H. Harris was a four-star general, and my father, Colonel Glenn McConnell, worked for him and respected him. But when young men, Marines, Army, Air Force, Navy, when young men or women would be killed in Vietnam, their caskets would be loaded on an aircraft and flown to Hawaii, and then from Hawaii to Travis Air Force Base in California. Have you ever heard the suggestion that in those caskets and inside the body, the torso, you've heard it, haven't you?
Yeah.
Would you tell your people what was inside those dead bodies were desecrated by greed, but, you know, not my words, you. Would you tell the world what was inside the bodies of U.S. servicemen?
Drugs.
Yes. And the generals were making untold wealth. One of the big shots in Vietnam was a guy named Alexander Haig. He died a billionaire. Now, he's been dead for a number of years. Do you think his $1 billion is improving his lifestyle? Not at all. But these people are easily suckered into this by a big lie. And the lie is that we are going to win. And so now I'm saying whoever lies to these generals, saying we are going to control the world and we are going to win. So your choice as a four-star general is to work with us and get incredibly wealthy, or work against us and get a bullet. They should have said, shoot, you know, don't talk about killing me, kill me, I dare you. But they didn't. They bend over and they end up facilitating the transfer of wealth in the form of narcotics hidden inside the body torsos of poor young, and it doesn't matter if they're American. I don't want to sound jingoistic or nationalistic. If I saw a Korean or a Kurd or an Iranian or a Yemeni, if I saw one of those people disemboweled so they could be filled with plastic bags filled with narcotics, I would become energized. I didn't say violent. I said energized. And I'm too old to be violent. I'm 67. But you know what? I'm not too old to have the world's most dangerous mouth. And I'm not too old to speak clearly in front of any people anywhere in the world. And I actually brokered a deal. When I was in Kazakhstan, there was a day in April of 2009 where Putin was in town, and I knew it because I saw his aircraft at the airport where I was working, and the president or the prime minister or whatever of Iran, the man with a very difficult to pronounce name, he was in Astana. And so, and I knew that. I've got a picture all over the internet, maybe you've seen it, where I'm standing in an airline costume in front of a Boeing 707, which is Iranian Air Force One. And, you know, my journey through life has been anything other than predictable. But for me to have the opportunity to be in Kazakhstan, standing right outside Iran's Air Force One, you know, How is that done? I didn't do it. But what I can tell you is after I flew that day, I went out and flew for the airline I worked for, which is Air Astana, the national airline of Kazakhstan. I got back to my hotel and I sent an email to the man in charge of Iran. And I'll do this very briefly because I don't want to take too much of your time. But on that day in history, there was a political prisoner in Iran, a journalist from America who is half Iranian and half American ethnicity. Her name was Roxana, R-O-X-A-N-A, Sabiri, S-A-B-E-R-I. I went to my hotel room in Kazakhstan. I sent an email to the president of Iran, and I said, dear Mr. President, your country's holding Roxana Sabiri, and she's alleged to be a spy. I said, she's from my hometown. She's a journalist. She may not have the intellectual gray matter sufficient to be a spy, but in any case, I assure you, she is not a spy. She was probably there reporting because of her Iranian background. She was sent there, but she's not a spy. And so what I'd like to offer you, Mr. President, is I've got a movie that I made that exonerates all Muslims for having nothing to do with 9/11. And the name of that movie, it's on YouTube. People can watch it for free. It's called Captain Sherlock Solves 9/11. We put that out in March of 2007. To this day, there's not a material misrepresentation in that entire movie. It makes a very easy to understand explanation of what happened on 9/11. But what I said to the president of Iran back in April of 2009, if you would be gracious enough to release her from captivity, I will give you the rights to distribute this movie about how the Muslims had nothing to do with 9/11 everywhere in the Muslim world, and I won't get a penny. You can have it all. Well, they didn't accept the movie deal, but they did. They released Roxana Saberi. And I would like to think that I played a big part in that. But, you know, I could be put in jail here in Britain because I could be considered a domestic terrorist because I say some rather critical things of the parliament. Well, I've been very, very, very vocal about the Grenfell fire. Back in June, there was a big fire in London where a bunch of foreigners were sadly, it's really sad, but they basically were incinerated. And I am confident, I am absolutely confident that that was intentional. But
Field, we're coming to the end of the first hour.
Okay.
I really want to thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Could you please share the contact information, your websites, or any way that we can support you in your efforts of trying to accomplish what you're doing?
Well, the support, most people think of support in terms of financial, and my organization is called ABLE, A-B-E-L, Danger, D-A-N-G-E-R, and we've never taken a penny of support, and we don't, you know, we could use it, but we don't want it, because sometimes when you accept money, then you have to do what the sponsors tell you. And we're not playing that game. But there's people out listening to your show, like any other show. Some of them are people that have an element of faith, and some of them are people that do not believe in anything more powerful than the human. For those who don't believe in anything more powerful than the human, if they'd like to support us using social media like Twitter or dropping links of our YouTubes or our radio shows. The best way for those people to contact me is my email address, fieldmcc@yahoo.com. For those people who have some element of faith, the most effective thing anybody can do for us is to pray. And they don't have to pray for Field McConnell or Abel Danger. I would solicit their prayers for our mission, and our mission is to expose evil and protect global commoners who do not understand the evil that's oppressing them, and even if they understood it, they would not know how to fight it. We do know how to fight it. Our website is abeldanger, abeldanger.org, and if anybody emails me, I can put them in touch with the man who controls our archive of YouTubes, which is probably about 1,000 YouTubes, and I control our archive of radio shows, which is about 575 radio shows. So whether someone believes in man or somebody believes in a divine power, you can do something for free that will help our message get out if you share our compassion and our mission to protect innocent people, no matter what their age, country, lifestyle, color, religious belief or lack thereof. Or, you know, anybody in the world is equal in my eyes, and I will do whatever I can do with my remaining days on this earth to protect them.
To listen to this full interview, just go to lightonconspiracies.com and subscribe. Give yourself the gift of truth and awareness while supporting Ole's hard efforts to get it out there.